The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Echo. I'm a senior student at the Village Zendo, and thank you for joining us this evening. So, living in the U.S., I'm told by many of my friends outside the U.S., many of us have been riveted by our presidential election. The run-up to the vote, the counting of the votes, the recounting of the votes, the certifying of the votes. I now know more, including the date when our electoral college cast their votes, than I ever knew or was interested in knowing about our election cycle and governing laws. And I've seen and been impacted by my neighbors, my friends, my family members, who have drastically different stances than I do. And with all things in life, it's quite complicated, and it's not. And this has called up for me a well-known case from the Blue Cliff Record, Case 59, called Why Not Quote It Fully? The case. A monk asked Chao Chu, the ultimate path has no difficulties, just avoid picking and choosing. As soon as there are words and speech, this is picking and choosing. So how do you help people, teacher? And Chao says, why don't you quote this saying in full? And the monk said, I only remember it up to here. And Chao said, it's just this. The ultimate path has no difficulties. Just avoid picking and choosing. So this is one of a series of four koans in the Blue Cliff Records where a monk asked Chao Chao this very question, how do you avoid picking and choosing? So it's obviously a really important question that we need to pay attention to. So a little bit about Chao Chao, who we also know as Zen Master Joshu in Japanese, who lived 1778 to 897. He was one of the great Zen masters of ancient China. And I'd actually heard his name before I ever began to study Zen. But it was said that his lips emitted light because his manner of teaching was to speak words that so profoundly expressed Zen that his students often had real immediate insight. And it was this ability to express really the true nature of enlightened mind in a way that was both, as someone said, pithy and succinct, that made his teaching so influential. So Joshu, Chao Chao, became a monk when he was 18 and stayed with his teacher, Nansen. Remember killing the cat Nansen, his teacher, for 40 years. An example of their exchanges, Joshu asked Nansen, what is the path? And Nansen says, everyday life is the path. And Joshu says, can it be studied? And Nansen says, if you try to study it, you will be far away from it. And Joshu says, if I don't study, how can I know it's the path? Nansen, the path does not belong to the perception world. Neither does it belong to the non-perception world. Cognition is a delusion, and non-cognition is senseless. If you want to reach the true path beyond doubt, place yourself in the same freedom as sky. You name it neither good nor not good. And at these words, Joshu was enlightened. But most famously, perhaps, for Joshu is the Mu Koan, right? Where the monk asks Master Joshu, does a dog have Buddha nature? And Joshu replies, Mu. Now, when Nansen died, Joshu grieved for a few years. And then at the age of 60, he decided to wander around for a while. This gives me hope. He spent the next 20 years traveling through China, meeting with many of the great Zen masters of the time. And then at the age of 80, he became the head of a small temple where he taught for 40 years, becoming a great master and dying at the age of 120. So, I only remember up to here. How do we avoid picking and choosing? When I attach myself to an outcome, my sister-in-law will change her opinion because of a Facebook post. One of my best friends will change her vote because of something I've done. I've chosen an outcome. when we're talking and I'm already thinking of what I'll say next, how I'll respond to her answer, I'll only remember it up to here. This isn't a dialogue to converse. This is a debate with a winner and a loser. And it doesn't mean I don't try. They are both clear about my positions and my whys. They just don't agree. They can't yet overcome their causes and conditions. William Isaacs, who's a great teacher, has a model for conversation. And it begins with defining conversation as to turn together. Conversation then leads to this fundamental choice point, deliberation, to weigh out. And the way is this: do I turn towards dialogue or do I turn towards debate? Debate to ward off, protect from attack. With debate, we either devolve into resolving by beating down, or sometimes we're able with skill to move the conversation to a dialectic, right? A tension and synthesis of opposites. But opposites. I only remember to hear. When I'm not picking and choosing, when I can suspend my position, I listen without resistance. I disidentify with position. I'm able to reflect, to explore underlying causes, rules, assumptions, to get to deeper questions. I'm present. And that can lead to generative dialogue. It invents unprecedented possibilities and insights. It produces what Isaacs calls a collective flow. My hope, my intentions are that my actions are generative and not oppositional, moving toward, not moving away from. That I'm motivated by how can I help, not just how can I be safe or how can I defend. I spoke last August about the great teaching that I received from Tokyu Hoshi, the framework of call and response. Call and response. My experience is that the calls are always here. The calls are constant. My skillful response, not so much, because I get in my own way. I don't hear the calls because I'm not really listening. I'm not listening because I'm too focused on my small self, my believed best self-interest, or I'm judging. And if I'm coming from a place of judgment, I am not helping. So I'm really focused on learning to hear the calls, because I'm often picking and choosing because I'm not so skillful. I've conditioned myself. Oh, those causes and conditions. I've conditioned myself to pick and choose. We talk about our Zen practice. And for me, Zen practice is listening practice. Because when I really listen, when I really hear the calls, the fear, the anger driven by fear, then I respond in a more skillful way. And this election cycle gave me many opportunities. Some I was better at responding to than others. I don't spend much time on Facebook, but I do have an account. I muted loved ones because I couldn't respond skillfully to their posts, which seemed driven by anger and fear. And I hung on to those words after I read them. There were after effects. So I pulled back from some relationships because neither logic nor compassion seemed to be able to be part of the dialogue. And I reminded myself frequently to watch out for the broad brush. Where I see lack of caring, others see encroachment. Where I see or want community, they see and want individual. We want a different balance. I tried to always recall that neither Republican or Democrat are a homogeneous group. And so I practiced. And in many situations, I learned my skillful means, my presence must be cultivated. It's a practice, it's a work in progress. I see this in my work all the time. Someone sends an email, and someone else, because they don't know the person well, they've had a bad experience in the past, they interpret bad intent, or just a different approach. And bang, the debate begins. Maybe not so clearly at first, but a debate nonetheless. You are wrong and I am right. But not in any case listening. Not exploring what's underneath the position, the suggestion. What are the causes, the conditions, the assumptions? Now, this exploring sounds like a lot of work, I know, and it is. And we're in a hurry. We have a lot to do, and we never have enough time. Just make a decision, resolve the conflict, and move on without exploring those underlying causes and conditions. And then, well, it's not really resolved. All those unresolved needs on the part of the other, they come back. Sometimes to the surface where they can be seen and dealt with, and sometimes like the hidden part of an iceberg where they just wait deadly, those unresolved needs are still there. So I recently read an article in the New Yorker on just this topic, and it referenced a new report from the Academy, the American Academy of Science and Arts, called Our Common Purpose, Reinventing American Democracy for the 21st Century. Pretty intriguing, huh? So this is what I have posted in the chat box, is a link to this report. So the American Academy's initiative on the practice of democratic citizenship was launched in the spring of 2018. And that was a pretty rough time, as the last few years have been for our country. So this commission includes scholars, thought leaders, former, current officials, practitioners, journalists, media experts, philanthropists, and they aim to enable more Americans to obtain the values, the knowledge, and the skills needed to participate as effective citizens in our diverse 21st century democracy. Now, in order to develop their recommendations, and this is why I'm in part bringing this up this evening, is the commission conducted nearly 50 listening sessions around the United States. And the intent of this strategy was not to collect a statistically representative sample, but to cast a wide net and surface personal experiences, frustrations, acts of engagement of a really diverse array of Americans. Through the listening sessions, the commission generated insights into what factors either discourage or promote democratic engagement. So there's 6 strategies with 31 recommendations. I'll just briefly list the 6 strategies. To achieve equality of voice and representation. To empower voters. To ensure the responsiveness of political institutions. To dramatically expand civic bridging capacity. To build civic information architecture that supports common purpose. And to inspire a culture of commitment to American constitutional democracy and to one another. So that's pretty ambitious. And then 31 recommendations about how to achieve this. So it's ambitious, but I found it so inspiring that a group would take the time to listen and to help us see what we need to do in order, for our skillful means, in order to help and support one another. And I'm going to read a bit of their conclusion. The opportunity to fully participate in our constitutional democracy is, in the words of Martin Luther King Jr., the chance to complete ourselves. Our best hope for human fulfillment lies in supporting and nurturing the political system that has been bequeathed to us, our constitutional democracy. Yet our ties to one another are fragile. The very institutions that should be the instrument of our freedom and the source of our protection appear to fail. We don't trust them. We do not trust one another. In fear for and anxious of our own prospects, we turn on one another. We starve our constitutional democracy of the nourishment it needs, closing our hearts to our fellow citizens. Why should we give our energies to one another again? Not to rebuild the republic as we knew it, not to restore golden age, Our public sphere is full of disagreement in great measure because voices formerly excluded are now in the debate. The clamor and clash of our contests are in this sense of victory. We have made ourselves a bigger people, a more capacious and sometimes contradictory people, and therefore a more resourceful people. The question now is whether we can find a way to accommodate one another so that we can give birth for ourselves to a sense of shared fate. We must therefore remember how to work together, even with those we might want to demonize or ignore, if we are to achieve the reinvention called for here. We have no time to waste. Our democracy is only as strong and resilient as our belief in it. For the love of freedom and equality, for love of country, for love of one another, and out of hope for a better future, we need to reclaim our bond. If we can turn back toward one another, we can transform our institutions, renovate our constitution, elevate our culture, and at last achieve a true democracy. So I'm still a work in progress, and knowing all of this in my head is not knowing it in my body. Am I able to avoid picking and choosing? I still feel awkward with some of my relatives, some of my friends, and many of my neighbors. I don't seek them out as often. I steer the conversation to safe places, where before I would have followed the dialogue to some unknown that I could explore. So I'm still a work in progress. But I have teachers. Many of them are here, of course, without whom I would not be speaking with you this evening and elsewhere. But Zuiryu and I sit virtually with the Sangha most mornings. We sit in profile to the computer, and that faces us towards glass doors that look out on a big expanse of lawn onto a large body of water. And we have lots of birds. During Zazen last week, a flock of Mexican tree ducks, which I had never seen before, and this week a crane, landed directly in view during the Zazen period. And then those birds began doing kinhin on the lawn, one foot in front of the other, fully focused, no thought, no fear, no intention, just one foot in front of the other, listening, call and response. And the crane, the single crane, swooped in, then landed, then just stillness, listening, then acting. One foot, one leg, one neck forward. Then the next and the next, all around the palm tree, one step at a time. No destination, no winner and no loser. Just sensing a grub and striking. Gulp. Being neither a crane nor a roshi, I'm not always that good at listening, at being present. Thomas Friedman had a terrific quote, as he often does, in a column several years ago. And I believe he was quoting Lafayette. And the quote was something like this. He said, "You Americans, you treat your democracy so roughly, but democracy is like a Fabergé egg. And if you aren't careful, you will break it." This is how I practice listening, being present, then tending the Fabergé egg, one foot in front of the other. Part of how I practice, I've been attending the Village Zendo sessions for decades. And even when I couldn't be with the group during the year, I found these periods of practice essential in my life. And this year, when there is so much noise around us, so much change, it seems even more essential. And I hope you'll be able to join us and find in yourself a way to listen deeper, a way to hear the calls, and I hope with me to practice a more skillful response. So I'll close this evening with a verse from Hutetsu. I think about this as I only mean this much. I only remembered it up to here. Take it to the end. Give every bit of yourself. I only meant this much. He's made his choice and he's chosen small. the great way, helping people, only take it all the way to the end. Take good care.